Up, Up, and Away, Episode 29, Superman for All Seasons, Books 2 and 3, Summer and Fall. Welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mario Benessi. Boy, I really jinxed that last episode, didn't I? Adding in the weekly podcast kind of came back to bite me in the butt a little bit, but not of my own doing. I wanted to get an episode out to you guys. I honestly, truly did, but it was just an impossibility. I had to move my stuff from one building to a new building, and that's pretty much across campus, and all of my friends that, you know, would have been able to help me were working, and so it was pretty much just me moving my stuff from one end of the campus to the other, and I would do it late at night, and it was just a pain in the butt. And of course in Florida it's coming up towards the end of summertime, and so it's raining, and it would stop, and it would start for, you know, 40 minutes, and it would stop 5 minutes, so it was very unpredictable weather. It was just a pain in the butt all around, and then on top of that, I had to make decorations for my new floor, and, you know, do that in between the couple of hours that I had not doing training, and then waking up at, like, 7:20 again in the morning to go start doing training at 8 a.m. till, like, 7, and it was just a big mess. And then I had to go and do checkouts for one building for the residents so that the summer residents could get out of there and getting to their fall rooms, or maybe just not come back to the university, and just a lot of building prep over at my new place, and it was just a mess. I barely had time to sleep, let alone time to record a podcast, so... You know, I'm sorry that I didn't get an episode out to you guys last week, but I'm making up for it this week by having a double-length episode. So that includes coverage of both Superman for All Seasons books 2 and 3, and then two episodes of The Adventures of Superman. So I finally saw Suicide Squad. I saw it the Thursday that it came out, and I liked it. I mean, yeah, it's... it's not a masterpiece, but it's getting way too much criticism. And frankly, I've never been a fan of the Rotten Tomatoes website. I think that their grading system or their rating system or whatever they try to do over there is a mess, and it really needs to be fixed because it's too extreme. You either liked it or you didn't like it, and there's no... it was just okay, or it was good, but it needed a little bit of improvement. It's, did you like it or not? And it's the same thing that I was talking about the last episode, where everything's so polarized, where you either have one end of the spectrum or the other, and you can't have any kind of middle ground. And that's what this movie was. It wasn't a fantastic piece of cinema. Like, I'm not saying that it was, like, the next Citizen Kane or The Godfather. Far from it. But it certainly wasn't something as bad as, like, Jack and Jill from Adam Sandler or anything like that. It was a pretty good movie, and it did have some problems. The editing was my biggest problem with it, just because, you know, I'm a film guy, and a lot of the problems that I saw came from the action sequences. And usually when you do an action sequence, you want to have a match on action. So, like, say somebody swings, like, a baseball bat or something, and the next shot, you want to have that next shot match up with the action that happened in the previous shot, so it's fluid, so you don't notice that there's a cut. But there were points where you did notice the cut, and it's kind of off-putting. It felt very choppy a little bit on the editing. Some sequences could have been left out. Some sequences could have been shortened. Some sequences should have been added back in. I know Warner Brothers had a hand in moving things around and adding little bits, and, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole reshoots thing. You know, I hear that was just for more action sequences, but I know that Warner Brothers did have their hands in the pot from all the negative backlash for Batman v Superman, and so they got scared and they started messing with things. And honestly, they really need to stop doing that. They need to start having more faith in the directors. Because David Ayer, apparently that's the correct way to say it. It's David Ayer, not David Ayer. I made a mistake a couple episodes ago. But David Ayer had a pretty solid script from what I had seen. And he has done some really good films before. End of Watch and Training Day. Those are really solid films. But I know Warner Brothers got their hands in the pot. I know it. And they probably did the same thing with Batman v Superman. In fact, they did do the same thing. They had Zack Snyder cut out 30 minutes of the film because they had fears that people weren't going to be able to sit through a three-hour film and keep interest. Either keep enough faith in your directors and let them do their thing. And if it's good, it's good. If it's bad, well, it is what it is. But have faith in the directors. You can't keep meddling in the artistic process. You can't keep forcing things down the director's throats and expect them to stay onto the film, because then you're going to get a lot of you're going to have a lot of tension between the creators and the studio, and then people are going to leave. It happened with Sam Raimi and the Spider-Man films. Fox wanted a whole bunch of little things shoved into Spider-Man 3, and well, look how that turned out. And then he left afterwards because he's like, no, I'm done with this. I'm done. Stop meddling in my creative process. But more regarding the film, I thought it was a pretty good film. The characters definitely carry it. Will Smith as Deadshot, he kills it. He's awesome. Margot Robbie, I am not a Harley Quinn fan in the slightest. I think she's annoying. I don't care for the character. I mean, I like the animated series from the Batman TV show from the 90s. I thought that was cool. But I just think she tries too hard, or at least the writers try too hard, to make her the zany, hot topic, I'm so random, LOL, kind of character, and it's off-putting for me. It comes off kind of cringy. But I actually did like Harley Quinn in this movie. You actually care about her. And that's, you know, if you get me to care about Harley Quinn, then you did something right with the character. In other news, Henry Cavill just tweeted a picture of the it's like a close-up picture of the black suit from, I think it might be the, well, no, it's not the same one that he has in Man of Steel from the dream sequence with Zod. This one has the Kryptonian writing down the center of it, or across the middle part of the S. So this is a new suit, but it's black. So please return with long hair and or beard upon resurrection. So first off, we're going to be taking a look at Superman for All Seasons, Book 2. It's entitled Summer, and it's same creative team, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Jeff Loeb writing, Tim Sale drawing. And this book is narrated by Lois Lane. Perry once told me, Lois, a reporter lives by three rules. Believe none of what you hear, half of what you see, and everything you write. I'm a reporter, or a newspaperman, as Perry would put it. A damn good one by anyone's standards, and mine are pretty high. I like Perry's rules. They make sense to me. Strike that. They made sense to me. Because now those rules fall under the same category. It's all BS. Before Superman. And Superman's just flying around Metropolis, doing his thing, and he starts to hear something. And he flies up into the sky. I mean, he's already in the sky, but he flies upwards above the city. Superman. I was the first one to call him that. It wasn't easy coming up with a name for someone who shouldn't exist. Collins over at the Star tried the Metropolis Marvel, but it sounded like a pro wrestler. Jimmy kept angling for Mighty Man, and I told the kid to stick to taking pictures. You know what I really wanted to call him? Too good to be true. He flies, he can see through walls, he can lift up cars or bounce bullets off his chest, or do just about anything he wants to. And that's the part that gets me. He can do anything he wants to. And he decides to do what? Be a hero? Why? And Superman stops this giant missile that's coming straight from Metropolis. And he drags it out into space, and he lets it explode into space so nobody gets hurt. And he flies back to Earth. We live in a world where nobody sticks their neck out for anybody. I write about it all day long. We lie to each other. We brutalize each other. We kill each other. And here's this man. It's amazing for someone who makes a living using words how often they can fail you. Sticking his neck out for everyone. way, way out. It's almost like he knows if we've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. And I'm sorry, I've been a reporter far too long to start believing in Santa Claus. And yet, when my sister Lucy and I were little girls, there was someone we both believed in. Superman dives into the ocean, and a passing vessel, it's a LexCorp vessel, they see him going into the water. He was dashing and rode a white horse and had a gold crown and a cape. His name was Prince Charming. Over the years, I'm disappointed to say that I've met a lot of men. Some were dashing, some rode white horses, some even wore gold crowns. And at LexCorp Towers, Lex is having a meeting when one of his assistants comes in and gives him a note, and Lex calls the meeting to an end. And Superman's swimming underwater, and he finds a submarine. But to wear a cape and not look stupid, that's somebody interesting. On board the submarine, everybody's panicking, and it's clear that they're up to no good, and we see a silhouette of a woman on board this submarine. At the Metropolis Air Base, Lex Luthor arrives to see a bunch of soldiers all gathered around something. One night, Jimmy and I were working the graveyard shift, getting out the last edition. The Bulldog, as Perry would put it. We were bored and tired, and we tried to figure out how much Luthor makes. Our best guess? $150 a second. In other words, if Lex Luthor found a $100 bill lying in the street, it wouldn't be worth his time to pick it up. And Superman just brings this massive submarine down, with one hand, mind you. And everybody's just amazed that this is happening in front of their eyes. And Superman tears the submarine apart and tells the people inside to surrender, and he tries to deliver an ultimatum, but he figures there's no point because they've already surrendered, and, well, there's what are they going to do against him? Lex Luthor comes after Superman, and he tells him that he can't just leave a submarine there on the tarmac and have the taxpayers clean up the situation that just happened. When one of the people on the submarine takes Lois, who was the woman that was on the submarine, if you hadn't guessed, takes her hostage and threatens, you know, to shoot her. And Lex says that he'll handle it because he's good at negotiating with people, even terrorists. And before Lex can even finish the word terrorists, Superman zips over, grabs the gun, and then crushes it. And then Lois pretty much takes the guy down because she's an army brat and she's got some skills. Lex offers to take Lois back to the Daily Planet, and she says, "No, sorry, buddy. Superman was going to take me back. So, adios." And Superman tells Lex that if he finds out that Luthor was behind this entire thing, the missile, the submarine, anything, he's going to come gunning for him. And before Lex can finish his sentence, Superman and Lois just fly off, and Lex just starts yelling at Superman. So Superman drops Lois Lane off at the Daily Planet, and Lois tells Superman, "Hey, look, nobody talks to Lex Luthor like that. It's just not a thing that happens here." And Superman says, "Well, it's about time that somebody did," and he flies off. So Lois enters back into the building, and Clark comes out of the supply room, and Clark asks Lois how she got on the submarine. Lois is kind of confused as to how he knows about that. So after the workday, Clark's got some groceries, and he goes into his apartment. It's on 344 Clinton, which is one of the common addresses that Clark had for a while. And he just, you know, unwinds for the night, and he makes himself a sandwich and sits in his bed and watches some TV. The problem, of course, with the whole Prince Charming thing is that it's a recipe for disaster. A woman has this ideal man in mind, and since no such man exists, no man can live up to that standard. And then along comes Superman and screws everything up. There's just so much about him that we don't know. Where does he go when he's not keeping a bridge from collapsing, or stopping a train from derailing, or answering a child's cry for help? As a reporter, it's maddening. As a woman, forget it. So Clark goes back to Smallville, and he tries to sneak up on Jonathan in the cornfield, and Jonathan's having none of it, and he just asks him, "Can you stay for supper?" before Clark even touches his shoulder. And Clark's kind of confused as how he knew, and Jonathan says, "Mud on city shoes has its own sound," and he'd know Clark's footsteps anywhere. Clark has this theory that Superman slips off to some kind of fortress of solitude. This from a man who starts his day with cornflakes. A fortress of solitude. I wonder if it has a drawbridge. So the Kents have a nice family dinner, and they're just catching up and seeing how Clark's doing, and Martha wants to know why Clark came back, and he says that he's lonely, he guesses, and Martha says that he can stay for as long as he wants. The next day, Clark goes to see Lana and her Aunt Ruth, and he's greeted by the pastor from the previous book, and he lets him know that Aunt Ruth died and Lana moved away, and it's been quite a while, and a lot of people around Smallville were kind of wagging their tongues that Clark and Lana were going to be a thing. That never really turned out. Does he live with someone? Does he have a girlfriend? A wife? Wives? Why do I even care? And the pastor also lets Clark know that he's become pretty much a celebrity for Smallville, and everybody in town buys the Daily Planet. They're all just so proud of him. So Clark goes to the general store, and he meets up with Pete Ross, and Pete figured that he'd always be the one to leave instead of Clark, and he asks him, you know, what's Lex Luthor like? Is he's a billionaire, what's he like? You know, you probably met him. And Clark says, yeah, I've met him, nothing special. He puts on his pants one leg at a time, just like the rest of us. Later that night, Clark and Martha are sitting on the porch, and Clark's just kind of beside himself, and he's not really sure what to do. Everything back home has changed, and everything in Metropolis, it's weird and new and foreign to him, and he doesn't know. He feels like, you know, he's suffering from growing pains. Martha tells him that it's all part of growing up, and it's not really easy, and it's not always going to be fun, but he'll find his way. Back in Metropolis, there's a fire at Chemco Labs, and it's bad. They have, like, 5 fire trucks on the scene, and they have 2 ambulances and a couple cop cars. It's a disaster. It's the last day of summer when the story comes over the wire. Perry sends Jimmy and me out at just past midnight. Chemco Labs is a young upstart company that, rumor has it, LexCorp is looking to buy. This is one hostile takeover Lex isn't going to get to enjoy. I go right to work, looking for the hook on the story. Immediately, there's the environment angle, but Perry will want something sexy if I want front page. Then the circus begins. I could almost kiss Lex, he's so predictable. They are the guardians of the city, LexCorp's latest attempt to move the spotlight off Superman. And at this point, 3 androids, they fly onto the scene, and they're wearing something very similar to Lex's battle armor, you know, the green suit with the purple highlights and the boots and gloves. Very cool, and they start flying towards the fire, and they start putting the fire out. Superman arrives on the scene, and he tells them, get lost, you're not helping at all. And at this moment, he spots a woman trapped inside the building, and he goes to save her. But it's typical Luthor. Send in the drones. No personality, no independence. Just do the job and let LexCorp take the credit. I'm looking for sexy, and he's giving me laundry detergent. I'll wind up on page 9. Suddenly it happens. What every reporter waits for. I have my hook. We've moved from page 9 to the front page in one moment. I have my story. The human element that sells papers. I sure as hell hope Jimmy is filming that camera of his. And so Superman, like I said, he rescues the woman, and he places her on a stretcher and has the paramedics take her away and make sure that she's taken care of. She's inhaled a lot of smoke. Then he takes off again, and he tells the drones to clear the area, and he begins to spin around in the air, and he creates this vortex and lifts the fire up and away from the building, and it's awesome. My heart races. I tell my eyes to believe only half of what I see, but I have my lead. This is a job for Superman. Perry would say I've lost my objectivity, and he's probably right. I've also got the front page. I cheer with the rest of them. Superman tells the drones to get out of there, that they almost let an innocent person die, and if it happens again, well, he's going to hold Luthor personally responsible. And Lois Lane interviews the woman that Superman rescued, and she asks her, if you could say anything to Superman, what would it be? And in the next panel, we see the next edition of the Daily Planet, and it says, he is my angel. And now I have my headline. Lex pulls up to an apartment complex, and the driver asks if she should just go up and get her. And Lex says, no, it requires a personal touch. So he climbs up the stairs, and he goes and rings her doorbell. And it's the woman that Superman saved. And he starts sweet-talking her and says, well, I've read about you, your fascination with Superman, and you're a gifted chemist. And she starts to go on and on about how great Superman is. And the last page is a splash page, a one-page splash, and she's got a shrine to Superman. And then Lex tells her that together they can help Superman in ways she's only ever dreamed of. There isn't a day when I don't think about Perry's 3 rules. And even though a Superman flies in the face of them, literally, as long as I believe everything I write, I'll sign my name to it. By Lois Lane. What a chapter. I absolutely love it. The art in this is still fantastic. The cover is gorgeous. I would love a poster of it. It would look superb on my wall. Just everything about this, it's awesome. The colors, I can't pinpoint exactly what it is about the coloring on this, but I think they make the blue a smidge darker or a little bit faded, and then they have the reds and the yellows really pop, and it just makes every panel that Superman's on just this amazing picture. Even the panels where he's not doing much, it still looks breathtaking. The stuff where he's underwater, it's awesome. Everything about this is great. I think the watercolor style really lends itself well to this character. I adore the three panels where the terrorist is holding Lois Lane hostage and Superman just zooms over and gets the gun. He's just a red, blue, and yellow streak in one panel. The look on Luther's face, he's just trying to figure out what's happened. His hat's flown off, his hair's a mess, and he's got this confused look. I love it. The panels where he's flying, everything. I love seeing these nice moments of Superman back in Smallville. Again, there's a great two-page splash of Clark and Jonathan in the fields. It's gorgeous. Like I said before, it's a Norman Rockwell painting with speech bubbles. The fire scene, the scene with the Kemco Labs fire, that's awesome. The sky isn't black, it's more like a purple. And it really makes the colors pop, especially with the contrast between Superman and Lex Luthor's drones. It looks great with the fire and the smoke. Then there's the one-page splash of Superman forming a vortex with the flames and sucking out and away from the building. It's great. Everything about this book is just great.
Up! And away!
After the theatrical cartoons, after the movie serials, a new medium helped define an icon for generations to come.
The Adventures of Superman.
Join Mike Zumo as the Man of Screen podcast enters the next phase with a year-long look at the 1950s television series The Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves as Clark Kent and Superman.
No comment until the time limit is up.
Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane during season one.
What are you afraid of? What are you hiding?
And Noel Neal as Lois Lane starting in season two.
Superman! What? Why did you wait?
Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen.
Mr. Kent is Superman.
John Hamilton as Perry White.
Don't call me Chief!
And Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson.
I don't want excuses, I want action!
So, follow along Mike and some possible guest hosts for an in-depth analysis of The Adventures of Superman, starting in June at supermanpodcastnetwork.com and manofscreen.podomatic.com.
This is a job for Superman. I mean, I've got to find it.
Okay, so let's take a look at Superman for All Seasons, Book 3. This one's entitled Fall, and it's narrated by Lex Luthor. And we start out with Lex Luthor being arrested. He's been arrested, and they have his fingerprints logged into Metropolis PD's records, and his mugshot is taken, and he's in prison. This is a love story. Not between a man and a woman, but between a man and a city. My city. Metropolis. Like all good love stories, it is full of betrayal, anger, tragedy, and revenge. There are those who will find this day ironic, even appropriate. They are misinformed. The public needs to be spoken to. Often they need to be spoken to as children, so they can grasp my position. Simply because my position is never wrong. Never. And so Lex is released from prison, and Lois asks him what it was like to spend a night in prison. Lex says that if after all is said and done, nobody's going to remember this. It's all going to be put in the past, and we're just going to continue moving forward. And so he gets into a LexCorp helicopter, and he is taken to LexCorp, but before they can get back, Superman flies in front of the helicopter and just kind of gives the pilots this look. It gives them the stink eye. I poured my life into the city. I gave it a personality, a look, a kind of elegance. She was my fair lady. I've grown accustomed to her face. And I was betrayed. Betrayed for another man, a so-called Superman. And so Lex returns to LexCorp, and he's bombarded with his workers, and they're asking him about what they're going to do about the press and the banks and the mayor, and Lex is just not wanting to deal with any of it, so he gets himself a drink, he pours himself a drink, and he takes a shower, and he gets a shave. The woman who is giving him a shave accidentally cuts him because she's using one of the old school razors instead of like a regular razor, and he dabs the blood, you know, after she apologizes profusely because she's scared, and Lex Luthor is a very scary guy. He dabs the blood, looks at it, and says, there's nothing to be sorry about. You made a mistake. I forgive you. I'd grown accustomed to her face. My city. Enough. Self-pity is for lesser men. Even as a child, I understood that concept. And no one will ever pity Lex Luthor. And so Lex is working at his desk from, well, the afternoon till late into the night. He's trying to figure some stuff out. The matter of the arrest must be attended to first. A snide comment from some shoeshine man will lead to giggling around the water cooler, until a mountain of disrespect will be upon me. The right judges will have to be spoken to. Police captains will require a well-timed donation. Favors, which I had other plans for, will be called upon, until finally even those who were present last night will doubt it ever happened, leaving only my rival. Not much of a challenge at all. And at this point, Superman is floating outside of Lex's office, and Lex tells him that, yeah, you better prepare yourself, buddy, because your shining moment it's coming to an end. Nobody is above me, and you're going to pay for putting me in prison, buddy. So, you know, enjoy your 15 minutes of fame while you can, because it's going to be ending real quick. Later on, Lex consults one of his scientists before visiting Miss Jenny Vaughn, which is the woman that Superman saved from the fire in the previous book, and she's strapped up to a chair and watching these videos of Superman, Clockwork Orange style. And he tells her that, you know, you're going to be able to help Superman, and you know, he's going to need your help. He's not going to want it, he's going to need it. Some people like to refer to this time of year as autumn. I prefer fall. And so later on at the Daily Planet, Clark has written a letter to Jonathan and Martha Kent, and it's got something in there about LL, initials LL at the bottom. And Lois discovers this, and she starts reading it. Clark comes up behind her. He's not amused. He starts interrogating, you know, that's private. Why are you reading that? She says, well, it looks like notes. And besides, how many people do you know in your life that have the initials LL? And Clark says, Lana Lang. It's about my friend. And Lois says that it's an honest mistake, and she starts going on and trying to reason with him that maybe he should start apologizing to her. And at this moment, she passes out, and she's sweating, and everybody in the Daily Planet is passed out, and it's not looking good. So Clark gently puts Lois down on the ground, tries to give her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. That's not working. She's got a high fever, rapid pulse, and Lex Luthor's got this smug look on his face at LexCorp Towers, and he looks very victorious at this moment. So Clark runs down the hall, opens the elevator, jumps down, does a shirt rip, flies out of the Daily Planet and up into the air when he sees that a Metropolis monorail has gone, well, it's on a path of collision. He needs to save it because the driver has also passed out from whatever is going on at the Daily Planet. Imagine his confusion. Every instinct to rush into action will be frustrated as the city dies around him. He can bend still until he is blue in the face. He can see through walls clear to China. He can even fly from here to the moon for all the good it will do him. This time, there will be no one for him to bully. Like a Dalmatian tied to the front of an empty fire engine, smelling the smoke, pulling ferociously at the leash, barking at the wind. With no one to answer, and Superman stops the monorail from going and hitting something, there'll be no one left to say thank you. No crowds to cheer his good intentions. No child's smile to brighten his day. So Superman flies over to Star Labs, and he talks to one of the scientists who was not affected because she was in a controlled environment, and she informs him that, well, it's a viral thing. It seems to be shutting down the respiratory system in a matter of seconds, and that it's probably been slowly leaked into the air until it reached a saturation point. And she asks Superman, well, maybe you should go see the person with the best biochemists in the city. Have you spoken to Lex Luthor? And so we cut to Superman floating outside of Lex's office again. And Lex says that he's not going to let Superman in, that he's quarantined to the building. And Superman asks him why he's not affected. And Lex says, my building has been a controlled environment, and he can't be too careful with terrorists. But he turns the question around on Superman, asks him, well, why aren't you affected? He starts calling into question, well, maybe it's because of your powers, you know, however you acquired them, scientifically, biologically, maybe you're just alien in nature. And this is the first time that anybody's really brought this notion to Superman. Maybe he is alien, because he doesn't know if he's alien. He just knows he's got all these abilities and that he's got to use them for good. And Lex accuses him of having brought the virus just simply by existing. So Superman starts calling Lex out on his crap and says, well, who's to say that you aren't the cause behind all of this? If I were to crash that glass window and drag you out here, how long before some LexCorp employee would appear with an antidote? The prospect of failure is too overwhelming for him. He cannot lose faith in himself, or he is lost. And Superman says, but I'm not going to take that chance. I'm not going to stoop to your level. I'm going to ask for your help. And Lost is exactly where I want him to be. And so Lex kind of revels in the moment a little bit. Oh, you need my help now, do you? And so he reveals Ms. Vaughn, who is calling herself Toxin. She's got this weird getup and this gun with some chemicals in it. And Lex fills Superman in. Oh, she's a biochemist, one of the best. And she's concocted a unique mixture of chemicals, which if it's administered to the clouds, it'll solve everything. And Superman says, all right, well, just give me the chemicals. I'll take it. I'm not going to risk her life. And says, oh, no. It's not that simple, Superman. You see, if you don't mix the chemicals properly, you're just going to doom us all. So she's got to go with you. Superman reluctantly agrees, and he takes her up, and they spray the chemicals into the air. I remember once as a child, my father, a man whose sole contribution to society was in siring me, set out to punish me with the back of his hand. He sounded almost trite as he promised that this was going to hurt him a lot more than it would hurt me. My father beat me repeatedly, intent on making me cry. And so the chemicals are working, and it's starting to rain, and all the people are starting to wake up from whatever was affecting them. And it's weird that the chemicals, they combined in such a way that the scent, it comes out smelling like poppies. And the Daily Planet, Lois recovers, and she wonders where Clark went. That's a very good question. And it starts to rain heavily. There's lightning everywhere, thunder, very dramatic. And Superman returns Toxin, Miss Vaughn, to LexCorp Towers and sets her down on the pavement. She's not looking too hot. I did not cry. I looked my father right in the face until he was done. In the end, it did hurt him more than it hurt me. I learned from my father to always give people what they want, but always for a price. And so we see Lex Luthor just looking on with this triumphant look in his face, and Superman figures out that Toxin, Ms. Vaughn, her heart stopped. And Lex starts to kind of rub it in, but not in a ha-ha-ha, look what happened, I'm so evil kind of way, but more in a very smug way. He says that, oh, poor thing, overexposed to the very virus that she cured. She will be missed, a true hero. He goes on to say, they say you can change the course of mighty rivers, but you have so little understanding of how fragile the human condition is, how easily a life, all life, can be lost. Being the most powerful man in the world means nothing if you are all alone. No one knows that better than I. Go back to wherever you came from before you fail us all. So back in Smallville, Jonathan and Martha Kent are sitting on the porch, and the dog notices Clark, and then so do Jonathan and Martha. And Clark's kind of walking toward the house, and he's got a very defeated look, and he says, I think I need to stay in Smallville for a while. This was a love story. Like all good love stories, it was full of betrayal, anger, tragedy, and revenge. And that's the end of book three. Again, this is a very, very, very strong installment in this series. The art is still top-notch. I cannot praise Tim Sale's art highly enough. Again, the art, it's great. I love the coloring. The watercolor style really lends itself well to Superman. A lot of great coloring in here, too. Right around the time that the storm starts to happen, we get a lot of very, very dark blues, as opposed to the last issue with the fire. We got a lot of purples. But this is, you know, reds and dark blues. You know, it's not even here for very long, but this is the standout part, the part where Toxin dies and Superman is mourning for her loss. You know, that's the standout part of this entire issue. Because everything else is really good here, too. But the centerpiece is really those two pages or so where it's raining heavily and Toxin's dying and Lex is scolding Superman. Again, great pages of Superman flying. I just love seeing Superman in flight. There's just something magical about it. This, I want to say, and I'm not entirely sure. I don't have it for a fact, but I want to say that Bryan Singer and his crew in Superman Returns, where Clark goes into an elevator in the Daily Planet and does a shirt rip and flies up, like he just. That scene where he just tears his clothes, just sheds them, and they fall down the elevator shaft, and he flies up. I want to say that's kind of inspired by this, where Clark runs into the elevator shaft, does a shirt rip, and then comes out as Superman, flying out of the Daily Planet and into the air. Lex is very stoic in this issue, and it really suits him well. I kind of wish we could have seen what was going on in the letter. You can read a couple words of it. But it's at a weird angle, and, you know, there's a coffee mug covering a couple of the letters and the edges of the panel and a pen and some potato chips that are on it. The bit where Miss Vaughn is strapped into the chair, Clockwork Orange style, we get a really cool wraparound screen that she's being forced to look at. And there are two great Easter eggs here. The first one is that we get to see Tim Sale's rendition of Action Comics number one. And then the second one, we get quite a bit of the narration from the Adventures of Superman opening. We get, look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. Superman who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. The only part that we don't get is, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. We just get, he fights for truth, justice, and the American way. And that makes sense, because, you know, everybody's not in on the fact that Clark is really Superman. Very cool nonetheless. The cover, it's a good cover. It reminds me very much of the cover to The Dark Knight Returns, I think issue 4, with the silhouettes of Batman and Superman facing off against each other. It's not my favorite cover of the entire book. That would probably be a tie-up between summer and winter, but it's still a good cover, and lots of oranges in it. So let's take a look at the Adventures of Superman. So the first episode that we're going to be looking at is called No Holds Barred. The reviews are written by James Lance over at the Superman homepage. Go read them if you haven't. They're really awesome. Original broadcast date, November 28th, 1952. Written by Peter Dixon. Directed by Lee Sholem. Stars George Reeves as Superman, Clark Kent, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen, and John Hamilton as Perry White. Guest cast is Malcolm Mealy as Wayne Winchester, Richard Reeves, no relation to George Reeves, as Bad Luck Brannigan, Dick Elliott as Sam Bleeker, Tito Rinaldo as Swami Ram, Herb Vigran as Mortimer Murray, Bill Kennedy as the wrestling announcer, and Henry Kolke as the Crusher. Professional wrestler Bad Luck Brannigan has placed several opponents in the hospital with his infamous paralyzer hold during his recent matches. Daily Planet editor Perry White believes that there is something crooked in the way Brannigan competes because Brannigan's manager, Mortimer Murray, is a shady character. To prove this, White has asked former college champion Wayne Winchester to assist in the investigation. While watching Bad Luck Brannigan on television with the Chief and reporters Lois Lane and Clark Kent, Wayne says that he never saw a fighting style like Brannigan's in college. It looks to Wayne like Brannigan is trying to deliberately hurt or even kill those men he takes on. Wayne wants to help the planet expose Brannigan and Murray no matter how risky it is for him. Things are tough for wrestling promoter Sam Bleeker. He has been forced to make a deal with Mortimer Murray because Bad Luck Brannigan has put most of Bleeker's talent in the hospital. Bleeker tells his friend Clark Kent of this while giving him ringside seats to Friday's match at the arena. Using his hypersensitive ears, Clark overhears details of Bleeker's discussion with Murray. Adonis Murphy will be the next person to compete against Bad Luck Brannigan. Wayne Winchester wants to see the competition up close in order to learn more about Brannigan. Clark provides him with the means to do so with the two tickets Bleeker had given him. With Lois Lane as his escort, Winchester may be able to expose Mortimer Murray's crooked athletes. We now turn our attention to Murray's gymnasium, where an Indian Swami named Ram is showing the wrestlers techniques to use on the pressure points in the bodies of their opponents. This is the true origin of Bad Luck Brannigan's paralyzer. Ram, however, feels his teachings are being used for nefarious purposes in spite of Murray's promises to return Ram to India while hiding him from the government police. Knowing that Ram is wise to his schemes, Murray wants to stop using him once Adonis Murphy is defeated Friday night. Murray intends to kill Ram before he becomes a danger to the crooked promoter's plans. It is the night of Bad Luck Brannigan's match with Gold and Adonis Murphy. Adonis has bad luck over his head. As Clark and Perry watch the competition on television, they notice that Brannigan has placed his hand on Murphy's leg as he applies pressure for his paralyzer. Adonis falls and Brannigan pins him. Gold and Adonis is unable to move. Now another wrestler has been placed in the hospital. It looks like there is nobody to challenge Brannigan until Wayne Winchester steps into the ring. He says that he will gladly face Brannigan next week. He surprises Bad Luck with a kick that puts the dishonest athlete on the canvas. Lois Lane and Perry try to convince Wayne not to fight Brannigan. Clark, on the other hand, believes that Wayne can defeat Bad Luck. Lois is angry with Clark, while Perry believes that Lois's relationship with Winchester is clouding the mild-mannered reporter's judgment. However, Clark still thinks Wayne can win against Bad Luck Brannigan. He'll just need some help from both Kent and Superman. Both Wayne and Brannigan are preparing for their wrestling match. Ram has taught Superman the paralyzing moves that Brannigan knows so Clark Kent can help Wayne defend himself against them. Ram also agrees to help right the wrongs his pressure techniques have created. To do so, he must aid Mortimer Murray and Bad Luck Brannigan one last time. However, the Swami may risk his life to aid Superman. Now that Wayne Winchester has built an immunity to Brannigan's paralyzer, he is ready for the match that will expose Brannigan. Wayne is able to counter Brannigan's moves and pin him. Winchester is victorious. This makes Mortimer Murray believe that Ram double-crossed him. He, Bad Luck Brannigan, and Crusher head back to the gymnasium to work Ram over. Clark needs to save the Indian Swami as Superman, but Sam Bleeker wants to negotiate with the mild-mannered reporter about giving Wayne a professional wrestling contract. Superman may not make it in time to rescue Ram. Clark has sent Jimmy Olsen and Wayne to talk with Bleeker, thereby giving him a chance to become Superman. The Man of Steel gets to Murray's gym in time to save Ram from being beaten by the nefarious promoter and his wrestlers. The police then arrive alongside Lois and Perry, who later find Clark Kent. Ram, despite being afraid that he too will be arrested, tells the authorities that he can undo what Brannigan has done to his opponents with his pressure point techniques. "Why, if you can, it will be like magic," Lois says. "Like the only real magic, the magic of knowledge," Clark replies. I really like this episode. It was kind of a weird transition to go from, you know, the more noirish episodes to this one, where it's not as noir, but, you know, you still got some crooked, players in here. Still very interesting. And then the final battle with Superman and the crooked promoters and wrestlers. What a throwdown. Like, that's Superman. He's rough and ready to tumble. That's what I like to see out of this Superman. Very, very cool. Highly recommend it. The next episode is The Deserted Village. Original broadcast date, December 5th, 1952. Written by Ben Peter Freeman and Dick Hamilton. Directed by Tommy Carr. George Reeves as Superman / Clark Kent. And Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane. Fred Sherman as Dr. Oscar Jessup. Maude Prickett as Matilda Tazey. Edmund Cobb as Peter Godfrey. Malcolm Mealy as Alvin Godfrey. And Anne Tyrell as Miss Walton. A sign reads, "Clifton, by the sea, population 525. A mysterious hand holds a piece of chalk that crosses out the number 2 on the wood panel. There is a sinister-looking fog throughout a deserted hamlet. A large being, clad in what seems to be a protective suit, is throwing rocks through windows of various houses as he lumbers through the streets. Phones are ringing off the hook throughout Clifton. One of the persons trying to call is Daily Planet reporter Lois Lane. Miss Matilda Tazey, a woman who had cared for Lois during her childhood, always sends her a gingerbread man for her birthday, and Lois wants to thank her. Lois has also tried to contact neighbors and businesses in Clifton with no response. The operator even tells her that the telephone lines are not down. Concerned, Lois is now going with Clark Kent to Clifton in hopes of discovering what's happened there. Only one digit, the number 5, remains on the population number when Lois and Clark see the sign for Clifton. Meanwhile, the being in the protective suit is about to throw another rock in another window as a fog hangs low onto the ground. A dog is in the mist, barking at the person. The animal passes out before the stone is hurled by the man. He thinks nothing of the canine at his feet and leaves. Lois and Clark finally arrive in Clifton, only to find it devoid of people. Now more than ever, Lois wants to know what strange mystery is in this deserted village. Lois and Clark have finally found a house in Clifton that isn't empty, but they also discovered that the dog in the yard is dead. The poor creature was neither injured nor old. The home belongs to Dr. Oscar Jessup, whom Lois and Clark hear moaning as they approach the front porch steps. As they revive him, Clark notices a gas mask and a gun in Jessup's desk drawer. Jessup himself is claiming to have had a fainting spell, but Clark knows otherwise. He sees shards of glass and a rock on the floor. Lois gives Jessup a glass of water. He recognizes her and tries to warn her and Clark to leave Clifton. However, neither of the two reporters intend to go until they see Mrs. Tasey and get to the bottom of this unusual situation. Dr. Jessup had led Lois and Clark to believe that Miss Tasey is gravely ill. They follow him to her house to find a woman who seems to be in good health. However, she too is acting peculiar. Like Dr. Jessup, Miss Tasey is trying to get rid of Lois and Clark. The pair refuses to give up until they learn what's going on in Clifton. Clark notices that Miss Tasey has a gas mask hidden in a basket of roses that she had picked from her garden. It's obvious that both Dr. Jessup and Miss Tasey are keeping something from Lois and Clark. Lois is having tea with Mrs. Tasey in hopes of finding out what she can about why the townspeople are gone. Only Dr. Jessup, Miss Tasey, pharmacist Peter Godfrey, and his son Alvin still reside in Clifton. Meanwhile, Clark is investigating the death of the dog, which he learns belonged to Dr. Jessup. The canine appeared to be exposed to poison gas that stays close to the ground. The strange thing is that the animal's body is missing when Clark and Dr. Jessup go to look at it. The good doctor is still warning Clark to stay out of people's business in Clifton, but the mild-mannered reporter has lost his patience. He's bound and determined to help Lois solve the weird mystery in the village in which she'd grown up. Clark has found large footprints hidden in a bush near Dr. Jessup's house when he meets Peter Godfrey. Godfrey tells Clark that people left Clifton because the oyster beds died out. He also speaks about horrible fogs in the area. Clark believes that they are the poison gas that killed Jessup's dog, Ranger. Godfrey's son, Alvin, arrives to tell both his father and Kent that he had been working in the back of the drugstore for the past hour. He does not know what happened to Ranger's body. The big fellow also advises Godfrey of a prescription that he had left sitting. Clark is becoming more and more suspicious. With the remainder of Clifton's population watching them in the shadows, Lois and Clark may never learn the cause of Clifton being deserted. Gunshots have been fired. Clark runs to the source of the sound to find Mrs. Tasey had tried to fire at the gigantic man in the protective suit. There's something else. Lois is missing, and Mrs. Tasey is afraid that she went where the grotesque being came from, an area near the sea. Clark has found Lois in a grotto where some mining has occurred. Some drill core has been uncovered. There is a substance on it that makes Clark understand why Clifton is deserted, but he'll need to get it tested somewhere else as Superman. Lois is in grave danger by herself with a large man murdering people with poison gas. She promises Clark to go to Havenhurst to wait for him. However, once Clark goes away, she enters the prospector's cave once again. Lois has possibly put herself in harm's way once again. The large man in the protective gear has caught Lois. Dr. Jessup tries to help her, but he is knocked out in the process. Mrs. Tasey enters the grotto to confront the giant when she is attacked by Peter Godfrey. Superman arrives to deal with the gargantuan beast and Godfrey. With both of them unconscious, the Man of Steel rescues Lois, Mrs. Tasey, and Dr. Jessup. It is then revealed that the big, strangely garbed man was Alvin Godfrey. He and his father conspired together to take Clifton's deposits of hydrazite, a substance used in hydrogen bombs, thereby ridding the town of its people before anyone else, including these papers, can learn of their discovery. The Godfreys, however, didn't count on the intervention of Superman. Lois now must head back to Metropolis to write the story for the Daily Planet and search for Clark Kent. She finds him as he's putting the number 3 on the Clifton sign's population. This makes Lois want to know how he found out about what happened in the small village. "Little bird told me," Clark says, "and if you're a good girl someday, I'll tell you who that little bird is." And that's the end of the episode. I like this one. It kind of, for the first about half of it, kind of feels a little bit like a Twilight Zone episode, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it's pretty straightforward. There's a bit of mystery here, so that's always fun for the viewer. And I mean, there's not really much going on for Superman fighting and being rough and ready to tumble, but we do get to see a shovel break over his head, so that's kind of cool. I don't know, there's not too much to this episode. I'd recommend it. It's a good one. I remember it, but it's not as bombastic or just like, yeah, let's go Superman. It's more of like Clark Kent and Lois Lane doing things, and it's kind of like The Secret of Superman, where it's a lot of mystery and a lot of Clark-based stuff and a lot of Lois-based stuff, and that's fine. I still like it. Really good episode. I recommend it. So let's jump into the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. I'm not going to be doing double-sized on this, making up for last episode's entries, just because the ones that I have for this one, one of them is rather long. So let's jump into that, and then we'll finish this episode out with the quote and the super fact. Aladdin, the mythical hero of the Arabian Nights whom Superman met during a visit to 20th century Baghdad. And that's in World's Finest Comics number 79, November-December 1955. See also Abdullah. Alpha and Beta, female criminals from Earth's 37th century who fought the Linda Lee Danvers Supergirl of the pre-First Crisis Earth 1. Because of their study of 20th century ancient history, they knew that Stanhope College student David Carew was destined to invent a vaccine against all diseases. Time traveling to Supergirl's present, they enclosed the campus inside a force bubble and threatened to destroy the college as Supergirl intervened. Alpha and Beta then attempted to force Carew to create the vaccine on command so that they could sell it at a tremendous profit in their own time. Supergirl responded by deliberately exposing herself to gold kryptonite to permanently erase her powers, enabling her to escape Alpha and Beta's notice as she sneaked onto the campus as Linda Lee Danvers, ultimately apprehending the two criminals with Superman's help. Fortunately, 37th century policemen, tipped by a time-traveling Man of Steel, were able to secretly shield Supergirl from the effects of the kryptonite. The Maid of Might was relieved to discover that she had not sacrificed her superpowers after all. And that's in Action Comics numbers 366 through 368, August through October 1968. The Alpha Centurion, a metahuman who began life as a soldier in the ancient Rome of Earth 1 in the time of Hadrian, the Alpha Centurion became a superhero and ally of Superman's in Metropolis. He had two incarnations thanks to the phenomenon of hypertime, the term used to describe the existence of multiple histories or time streams. Superman encountered the first Alpha Centurion when he found himself in one such alternate timeline during the universe-altering event known as Zero Hour. The Adventures of Superman number 527, September 1995. In the Alpha Centurion's world, Superman did not exist because the Centurion was Metropolis' resident hero. He was also the Metropolis Marvel's replacement in the romantic life of that time stream's Lois Lane. This Alpha Centurion joined the superheroes of the main timeline in their struggle to stop the insane Parallax, see Green Lantern, from destroying the universe and remaking it according to his own design. When Parallax was defeated, the Alpha Centurion dematerialized. It was not known whether this incarnation continued to exist in some other hyper-timeline. The Adventures of Superman number 516, September 1994, and others. The Centurion who appeared in the Metropolis of Earth shortly thereafter was one Marcus Aeolus, who had been abducted from ancient Rome circa AD 100 by interstellar explorers from the planet Vimaru, perpetrators of classic alien abductions since the dawn of human civilization. However, unlike modern-day instances in which the abductee loses only a few hours of his or her life, Aeolus spent 10 Earth years on Vimaru. During this time, he absorbed much of his host's general knowledge, particularly their technology. Aeolus integrated his Vimaru influences into his Roman customs and style. One result was his superheroic costume, an amalgam of traditional superhero garb and Roman toga, sandals, helmet, and so forth. Eventually, Aeolus set out for home in a Vimaru spacecraft he dubbed the Pax Romana, but landed in Metropolis to discover an Earth 1,800 years in his own future because his journey to Vimaru had taken place at faster-than-light speed. Aeolus quickly adapted to his new environment and, after learning of Superman's existence, concluded that he could use his own physicality and superior technology to become a heroic figure himself. In time, he was drawn to the Contessa Erica Alexandra del Portenza, who was then the CEO of LexCorp. With her support, Eilis transformed Team Luther into the Centurions and led this private security force to protect Metropolis using techniques and principles derived from comparatively harsh ancient Roman law. It's in Superman The Man of Tomorrow, number 2, fall 1995, and Action Comics, number 715, November 1995, and others. Eilis self-identified as a colleague of Superman's rather than a rival, ultimately demonstrating both friendship and loyalty by accompanying the Kal-El Superboy, Steel, and Supergirl on a deep space mission to rescue Superman from the Galactic Tribunal, which had charged the Man of Tomorrow with having destroyed Krypton. That's in Superman Volume 2, number 106, November 1995, and Superman the Man of Steel, number 51, December 1955, and others. Sometime later, Eilis was publicly humiliated when innocent bystanders were injured during a Centurion operation. Suspecting Luther of orchestrating his disgrace, Eilis responded by disbanding the Centurions and returned to working solo without a connection to LexCorp. Later, he disavowed the Vermeer as well when he learned of its sinister plans for Earth, and that's in Alpha Centurion Special Number 1, September 1996. Alright, let's move into the super fact and then the super quote, and then we'll end this issue out because my voice is killing me. It's kind of interesting that one of the episodes that we covered today for The Adventures of Superman has a little bit of mention of Lois Lane's birthday, because that's what this episode's super fact is. Lois Lane's birthday is traditionally recognized as August 17th. And this episode's super quote comes from the Man of Steel himself, from the story Superman Peace on Earth. "The welfare of Earth and all its people will always be my primary concern. But if there is a solution of hunger, it must be one that comes from the compassionate heart of man and extends outward towards his fellow man. There's an old saying, give a man a fish and he eats for a day. Teach him to fish and he eats for a lifetime. That simple message asks humankind to nurture with knowledge, to reach out to those in need and inspire others to do the same. That is life's greatest necessity and its most precious gift." Good night, folks.
Up! And away!
Well, I'm a small town boy with a heart of gold. Not the edgy vision and breath that's cold. I got super strength, I'm immune to pain, but I'm she got a sexy walk and the bluest eyes. Her clothes are all painted onto her thighs. She got great taste, so I just don't see why she's in love with my costume and not with me. I can change the course of rivers, bend steel in my bare hands. But none of that hokey macho stuff makes me feel any more like a man. I'm faster than a speeding bullet, I'm tougher than a moving train. But why leap a tall building in a single bound when I'd rather jump Lois Lane? Now I'm a nice, easygoing kind of guy. I got mild manners and my wit is dry. But it doesn't ever seem to matter what I say, 'cause Lois never gives me the time of day. But when I fly the city in my blue and red, she'd risk the whole world just to get me to bed. But that's not the way I wanna let her get my bod. It's not making love, it's seducing God. I've told her a thousand times we can never have normal sex. If I lose control, we could get David Cronenberg to do the special effects. I'm faster than a speeding bullet, I'm tougher than a moving train. But why leap a tall building in a single bound when I'd rather jump Lois Lane? Well, I'm sick of all the supervillains poking fun just because I'm still a virgin at age 31. I don't like the names that I'm being called. I couldn't care if Lex Luthor's always been more bald. I'd love to let Lois know the way I feel, to let her know the man underneath the steel. But she doesn't want to have a thing to do with me unless I'm out bashing baddies in my BBDs. I've had it with the hero of his frustration has got me down. Why should I bother with saving the city when I'd rather be painting the town? I'm faster than a speeding bullet, I'm tougher than a moving train. But I'd throw it all away in a minute if I could just once get the jump on Lane.
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit www.upupandaway.podomatic.com. The show and other Superman-related goodies can be found on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through email at mbenesi94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, and Superman and all related images are property of DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.